Okay, let's unpack something that, I mean, it feels like it shouldn't exist yet. We're looking at a stack of documents here. Technical blueprints, federal grant applications, some very, very dense financial reports that claim to solve the biggest problem of the mid-21st century. It is February 9th, 2026, and today we are talking about the sovereign stack.
It's a heavy stack. And honestly, when you first get into the source material from the Dear Tequila Academy, it reads a bit like science fiction. It really does. But then you check the citations, the USDA filings, the blockchain transaction hashes, you know, the Department of Defense capability statements, and you realize, oh, this isn't fiction. This is a very real, very aggressive financial strategy.
Aggressive is definitely the right word. The whole philosophy kicks off with this idea, this conflict between linear fragility and spherical resilience.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically saying the old world grid, the one we're using right now with like 1,000-mile cables and these huge centralized data centers, is obsolete.
Obsolete and dangerous. That's the core thesis. They call it the death of the line. The argument is pretty simple in a kinetic environment, which is they're a light way of saying a world with extreme heat, dust, supply chain collapses, or war, a linear grid is a suicide pact.
The suicide pact.
Yeah. If a cable snaps three states away, your lights go out. Your bank account freezes. Your hospital just stops working. That is linear fragility.
So the solution they propose is to go spherical, to build a mesh. But, you know, usually when we talk about this stuff, we get lost in the gadgetry. We talk about the tech.
Always.
Today, I want to do something different. I want to follow the money. Because you can have the best blueprint in the world for a post-grid civilization, but if you can't pay for the copper and the silicon, it's just a fantasy.
That is exactly the right lens. The most impressive thing about the Dear Tequila Academy isn't the hardware, really. It's the financial engineering. They've developed this model they call concurrent acceleration.
Concurrent acceleration.
Yeah.
And if you want to understand how this infrastructure is actually getting built, you have to understand that term.
It sounds a little bit like corporate buzzword bingo, I have to say.
Yeah.
But the application seems pretty radical. How does it work in practice?
Well, it's a direct reaction to the traditional education model, which they just call a debt trap. Think about the standard university path, right? Mm-hmm. Even now in 2026, you borrow a massive amount of money.
A huge amount.
You spend 4 years removing yourself from the workforce to get a degree. You graduate with all this debt, and then you just, you hope you find a job to pay it back. It's a linear progression, and it puts all the financial risk on the student.
Right. You're financially vulnerable exactly when you need to be building your life. You're starting deep in a hole.
Dear Tequila flips that entirely. Mm-hmm. Their goal is to secure non-dilutive capital. They don't want to produce employees. They want to incubate sovereign nodes. And the specific mechanism they use, and this is in their 2026 regulatory compliance addendum, is something called the Dean's Letter of Intent.
I was reading through the template for this letter. It's intense. It's not a recommendation letter. It's described as proof of technical intent.
Exactly. This document, it bridges the gap between being a student and being an infrastructure developer. This letter allows a student who is still in training, mind you,
still in training,
to apply for federal grants as if they are already an established operator. They're effectively telling the government, I am building this critical infrastructure, and here is the cryptographically signed technical backing from the Academy to prove I can actually pull it off.
So they're funding their job before they've even finished learning how to do it.
And it's working. The data in this remnant funding report they put out, it highlights a 98.4% success rate for students securing capital while they are still securing knowledge. They aren't just learning to weld or code, they are being capitalized as business owners. From day one.
That is a staggering success rate.
Right.
But let's get specific. What exactly are they buying with this money? The stack has, what, three layers? Heart, brain, and soul. Let's start with the heart, the energy layer.
The heart is the Agri-Sovereign Power System, or SPS. And this is where the tech gets wild, but the funding gets really, really smart.
This is the machine that uses the molecular scissor, which I have to say is the coolest name for a waste management system I have ever heard.
It is a great name.
But what is it actually doing?
It's high-precision chemistry. The mistake people make is thinking it's an incinerator. Incinerators burn trash, they're dirty, they smell, communities hate them. The molecular scissor uses plasma gasification at 1,500 degrees Celsius.
1,500? Wow.
And at that temperature, matter doesn't burn. It dissociates.
It just breaks apart.
The molecular bonds shatter, You take old tires, plastic waste, hemp, biomass, whatever, and you turn it into syngas.
And syngas is the fuel.
Correct. You can burn the syngas to generate electricity immediately, or you can condense it into synthetic diesel to store for later. But here's the funding trick. You don't pitch this to the government as a cool science experiment. And you certainly don't pitch it as burning tires.
Because the government does not fund burning tires.
No. You pitch it to the USDA. Specifically, the Rural Energy for America Program, USDA REAP. The source material mentions a quarterly window closing on March 31st, 2026. The Academy's AI Dean, Remnant, gives this a strategic alignment score of 100 out of 100.
100 out of 100. Why is the fit so perfect?
Because the USDA isn't looking for cool tech. They are looking for rural economic resilience. They want market expansion for U.S. agriculture. So if you tell them, I am deploying a green industrial engine that allows American farmers to turn hemp waste into energy independence, you are speaking their language. You are solving their problem, which is keeping rural economies alive.
It's all about the framing. You aren't selling a machine. You're selling rural survival.
Precisely. And they've buttoned up the compliance side, too. We have to mention the Genius Act and the Clarity Act because in 2026, you can't touch finance without hitting these regulations.
Right, because this whole ecosystem uses stablecoins for machine-to-machine settlements. And the crypto regulatory environment is so much tighter now.
It is. So under the Genius Act, any stablecoin used in the stack has to be one-to-one backed by cash or U.S. treasuries. No algorithmic backing, no funny business. And the Clarity Act classifies their utility tokens as digital commodities under the CFTC. This makes the whole operation audit ready.
So they're playing by the rules. They aren't trying to skirt the law. They're embedding themselves right in it.
It's the only way to get federal funding. You have to be cleaner than clean.
Okay, so the USDA pays for the energy, the heart. Let's move to the brain. The nerves, the computing layer.
The Ryo CC1000.
The specs on this thing are, they're aggressive. It says here, breathe, don't spin.
That's the design philosophy for the cooling system. And it really matters for the funding. Traditional servers use fans, right? They suck air in to cool the chips. In a desert, a war zone, or even just a dusty farm, that fan sucks in grit and dust and moisture. It kills the machine in months.
So how does Rayos handle it?
It uses a positive pressure cycle. It's constantly blowing air out. It creates this sort of high pressure bubble inside the case so that dust can never get in. It keeps the internals pristine.
That makes a ton of sense. It's IP67 rated, totally ruggedized. But the real innovation, and the thing that seems to catch the government's eye, is the security. It doesn't use a standard firewall. It uses the Watchtower protocol.
This is the RF fingerprinting tech, and this is critical. Standard security checks, what, a password or an IP address?
Sure.
Both of those can be spoofed or stolen. RF fingerprinting looks at the physical radio waves the device itself emits.
Like a voice print for a machine.
Exactly like that. Every piece of hardware has these microscopic imperfections from when it was made. No two radios are identical. The Watchtower protocol identifies the device by those physical imperfections. You can't spoof physics.
That sounds like military-grade tech. I mean, who pays for a farmer to have spy-level security on their server?
And this is where the Academy's funding strategy gets really clever. They tap into two completely opposing sources of capital. On one side, you have the federal government, the NTIA.
The National Telecommunications and Information Administration.
Correct. And specifically, they are hitting the BEAD program, Broadband Equity, Access, and Deployment. This is the big infrastructure money. But, and this is key, the Academy isn't asking for money to lay fiber optic cable.
Why not? Fiber is the gold standard, isn't it?
Fiber is linear. It breaks. If a backhoe hits a fiber line, the network goes down. So they are applying for the workforce development slice of that pie. They go to state broadband offices and say, look, fiber cuts happen. You need a backup. You need a last mile mesh network that stays up when the main line goes down. And we train the certified RIOS administrators to keep it running.
So the government pays for the resilience. The backup plan. But you mentioned a second source. The machine economy.
This is the Web3 angle. We're seeing this convergence of government grants and DePIN decentralized physical infrastructure networks.
DePIN. I see that acronym everywhere in the tech press now.
Think of it as like crowdfunding for infrastructure, but managed by a blockchain. Mm-hmm. The Academy targets grants from the Peak Foundation and the Arbitrum DAO. These organizations have billions in capital and they want to build decentralized networks, but they have a massive problem. They live in the cloud. They need physical hardware to actually run the network.
And the Academy has the hardware.
They have the barbedware, and they have something they call the flood strategy.
The flood strategy.
They mobilize teams of developers to build decentralized apps, apps that run specifically on the RIO's operating system. This lets them tap into these crypto-native funding pools that are desperate for real-world assets. They basically go to the crypto whales and say, you have the software, we have the steel, let's make a deal.
I love the duality of this. To the USDA and NTIA, they say, we are building rural resilience and public safety.
Mm.
And then to the Arbitrum DAO, they say, we are building the machine economy and DeFi infrastructure.
And the beauty is, both statements are true. The sovereign stack sits right at that intersection. It's physical thermodynamics meeting digital ledger technology. It's a hedge against the system, funded by the system.
So we've funded the heart and the brain. But the third layer is the soul of the human operator. Because you can't just drop a plasma reactor on a farm and walk away.
Right.
How do the students actually land these contracts? It's not like you can just email the Department of Defense.
No. In the world of government contracting, you don't send a resume. You send a capability statement. And the Academy has tailored three distinct versions of this document for their graduates to use. This is market segmentation at its absolute finest.
Let's run through them, because this really shows how they tailor the pitch.
Okay, first, you have the Web3 DePIN statement. That one focuses on machine DeFi and on-chain credentialing. It talks about tokenizing energy output, using NFT badges to prove skills. That works for the crypto grants.
Then you've got the public safety and defense version.
Right. This is for the Department of Homeland Security, or the DOD. And here, the buzzwords change completely. They talk about Black Start capabilities.
Black Start? That sounds intense. What does it mean in this context?
It means the ability to reboot a power grid from zero without relying on external power lines. If the national grid goes dark, how do you turn the lights back on? You need a spark. The Academy claims their units can restore civilization-critical services, encrypted chat, medical records, financial rails, in 15 minutes.
The 15-minute promise. Right. Okay, if you are a base commander, that's all you care about. You don't care about crypto. You care that your comms work when the grid is down.
Exactly. And the third version is global impact. This is for USA or the UN. This one focuses on poverty alleviation, and they have a powerful case study to back it up. Project Umoja.
Right. I saw the notes on Node 4 in Uganda.
This isn't theoretical. They have a real-world deployment there. A 10-megawatt plasma plant running off local biomass, powering an AI medical clinic that's running GPT 5.2.
So they are bringing top-tier AI medicine to a place without a reliable power grid.
It proves the model works in a resource-constrained environment. And that success helps them secure grants like the HHS RERC, that's Health and Human Services for AI-driven tech. They can go to the U.S. government and say, look, we did it in Uganda. We can certainly do it in rural Kentucky.
And once these students graduate, once they become sovereign systems architects, they aren't just left on their own, are they? There's the private RF keyboard.
This is essentially a curated job board, but for high-level government contracts. Because the Academy acts as a venture studio, they funnel these opportunities directly to their grads. We're seeing contracts from the Department of Interior for remote mineral exploration.
Using the Nightingale IoT fabric.
Yes. Using drones and sensors to map terrain in 3D. The government needs data from these hard-to-reach places. They can't send a generic IT guy with a laptop. They need someone who brings their own power, their own satellite uplink, and their own secure server. These students are the only ones with the hardware to do that job.
It really feels like they have covered every single angle. You have the training, the funding, the hardware, and the contracts waiting for you. But ultimately, all this funding, all this tech, it drives toward one goal. Island mode.
Island mode. That is the end state. It's the ability for a community, a town, a farm, a base to operate its own power and compute independently. But there is an economic engine inside that island that we really need to highlight, the spark spread.
The spark spread.
Okay. Yeah.
This is the economic heartbeat of the system. Break that down for us.
Imagine you have that plasma core. You're generating Syngas. You have an AI decision node, the remnant logic, watching the markets in real time. It has to make a choice every single second.
A choice between physical and digital value.
Exactly. If the price of Bitcoin is high, or if there's a massive demand for AI processing power, the node burns the gas, generates electricity, and mines crypto or processes data. It exports digital value. It literally turns waste into math.
But what if the crypto market crashes? Or if the internet goes down?
Then it looks at the physical market. If the price of diesel is high, or if the local community needs fuel for tractors and trucks, it just condenses the gas into synthetic diesel and sells the commodity.
So it's constantly arbitraging between the two.
It maximizes the spread. It ensures the node is always profitable, regardless of what the broader economy is doing. If the digital world crashes, you sell diesel. If the physical supply chain breaks, you sell compute.
That is the definition of resilience. It's not just keeping the lights on, it's keeping the bank account full. It makes the entire system anti-fragile.
And to keep this tech ahead of the curve, they are even tapping into innovation grants. The Hack the Forge competition by CodeLaunch, the EDDay Industry Transformation Grant, these are vital because they fund the R&D.
I noticed a note here about a shift in how they handle that funding, from retrospective to real time.
This is a subtle but massive shift in the grant world. Usually, R&D tax credits are a nightmare. You do the work, you pile up receipts in a shoebox, and then a year later, you pay an accountant to apply for a credit. It's slow and it's inefficient.
And cash flow is king for a startup.
Absolutely. But because the Academy uses AI tools to document every step of the build, every line of code, every single weld, they are capturing R&D documentation in real time.
So they can access that capital much faster.
Much faster. It increases the velocity of money through the system. They aren't waiting for the government to catch up. They are filing for credits as the work actually happens. It's a continuous funding loop.
It's faster, it's smarter, and it's funded from every possible direction. So let's wrap this up. We've looked at the three layers of the sovereign stack and, crucially, how they are paid for.
The heart. AgriEnergy, funded by the USDA REAP program to support rural farmers and, you know, economic resilience.
And the brain.
Rio's Compute, funded by the NTIA for broadband resilience on one side and Web3 DAOs for the machine economy on the other.
And finally, the soul.
The human operator, funded by workforce development grants and sustained by that spark spread arbitrage.
And the takeaway here seems pretty clear. The linear world we're all living in, it's fragile. It's one storm, one accident away from going dark.
It is. And the money, the smart money, the government money, the crypto money, it's moving towards spherical resilience. It's moving towards systems that can take a hit and keep running. The capital is fleeing the grid and moving to the edge.
It brings us back to that quote from Remnant, the AI dean. It's a bit haunting, actually, given the state of the world in 2026.
There are two types of people. Those who wait for the lights to come back on and those who never let them go out.
And the question for you, listening right now, isn't just about which one you want to be, it's which one are you financing?
That really is the question.
That's it for this deep dive into the sovereign stack. Thanks for listening.